Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You better, you bet on radio.com and the radio.com app.
All right, back here. You better, you bet. Radio.com Sports BetQL Audio Network. Football Friday ahead of Championship Sunday in the National Football League. Let's bring on our friend Rufus Peabody, one of the smartest pro bettors out there. You listen to his podcast, which is the Bet the Process podcast. You follow him on Twitter at Rufus Peabody. Rufus is always on the ball, and we love having him on to break down all sports here on You Better You Bet, especially Conference Championship Sunday in the NFL. Rufus, what's going on, brother?
How's it going?
Friday ahead of Championship Sunday. How you feeling, my man?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm excited for some football. Although I will say, this tends to be one of the more stressful weekends, just because I'm like trying to get all my old code in shape for getting ready for Super Bowl props. It's kind of like the dress rehearsal, but in this case, it feels like a play that opens tomorrow and I haven't even looked at the script yet.
Right. Well, you stole the thunder from my last question, which was going to be, I know that when you've come on the show before, you are like an active Super Bowl, you know, prop bettor. This was like one of the ways that you were able to build your bankroll earlier in your career. I think you've even told us stories about it before. So it's 2 days before Championship Sunday. It's, you know, you have some time before the Super Bowl. You've done no work on props whatsoever so far? Like the slates are clean, or you've started your prep for that already?
So I'm dusting off some code and running some code right now, actually in the background while this is going on. So yes, a little bit, but I used to actually bet props every single week of the NFL season and even some college football props back in the day. So it's just like a once a year thing at this point now, though. It's just so labor intensive.
So forgive, this may be a really ignorant question, so forgive the ignorance behind this. I like to say, I speak for the common person here who does. I can barely fucking get my internet on, much less code, and do any shit like that. So for you right now, when you say like you're dusting off the old code here, are you like inputting like any of the possible matchups here? So like you're doing stuff for like Bucks Bills, let's say, but also doing, you know, Packers Chiefs, like take us like the rudimentary process that you're going through right now and like break it down for the layperson like me.
So right now, I mean, so actually yesterday I scraped the JSONs for snap counts for different, for like pass blocking, run blocking, pass rushing, basically snap counts and types for every player, for the teams that are still alive, because that feeds into some code. So the way I generally approach it is sort of a top down, where I'm looking at I have a projection for the team. So I might say, you know, the Packers are going to have 64 plays and the Bucks are going to have 62 plays. And then I project their rushing and passing percentage off of that. And so, but the rushing and passing percentage very much is going to depend on game state too. So if Kansas City was playing a bunch of games during the season where they had a big lead, you know, they're not going to be passing the ball as much when they're up big. So I control for that. And so kind of I have a factor. I say that like Kansas City might be, you know, 18, you know, have a pass percentage factor of like 1.18, meaning they're 18, they're going to pass 18% more than the average team in a neutral situation. So I'll sort of apply that. And then, so then I'll have like the number of dropbacks. And then from there, it's like, well, what percentage of dropbacks is Mahomes going to scramble on? Well, you know, what percentage of dropbacks is he going to be sacked on? What percentage? And then I know the rest are going to be pass attempts. So, you know, what percentage are going to wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, and what percentage are going to be interceptions. And then from there, I allocate the receptions to different players. Well, allocate the targets first off, and then the catches. And so it's a top-down approach.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, Nick and I were just texting. I think this type of stuff is really, really interesting for the people that listen to our show. Nick and I try to get into some like basics, like power ratings and simulation and stuff like that. But I think what you're describing is like, I mean, this is a very elite high level approach that a lot of people are probably not taking when they're going through stuff. So this is just like pulling back the curtain completely, which I think is really interesting. I think this is where the question though, you know, you mentioned you used to bet it every week. Now you don't, but there's gotta be somebody listening to this. That's like, okay, you just went through the trouble of bringing in every team that's playing this weekend and it's Friday. Like, why not just bet Sunday's props too? Like, are you actually applying some of this to Sunday's games?
Oh yeah, I'm going to be betting Sunday.
And can you tell us about some? Yeah. Can you tell us about some?
Well, no, I'm not ready. I'm not there yet. But I was going to say, so betting props is a great way to sort of build a bankroll if you're getting started, because the limits are lower, but they're less efficient markets in general. So they're definitely easier to win. And I think that one thing to look at, I mean, I think that they have gotten a lot more efficient, because 10 years ago, you didn't see targets in box scores, for example. Their targets seemed to be like undervalued. People looked at catches. Now, I mean, you know, if a team had 40 completions last week, a guy might have had, you know, 8 catches, you know, 20% of the team's catches. But you know, if you're only projecting the team to get 25 completions the next week, you know, that's not 8 catches, that's 5 catches. And I think also look for some hidden edges. I think there's a lot of stuff out there nowadays. Look at what happened, for example, on plays that were negated by penalty. You could have a guy that caught a 30-yard pass and it gets brought back due to a holding penalty. To me, it's equally predictive. I mean, the fact that this guy got a target and caught a 30-yard pass, like, you know, that you shouldn't be excluding that. So I think there's a lot of hidden advantages if you kind of look a little deeper in the data.
Well, Rufus, how about this, buddy? You take this one from Nick Costos. You take this one on the house. Chris Godwin dropped like the 35-yard touchdown pass this week. That motherfucker's going over this week. That'll be my one.
Nick's running the code on that. The code's running in the background.
That's what the code spitted out was the Chris Godwin receiving yards over 63 and a half over at Bet Rivers. Rufus, let's get your thoughts on the two games here. And let's start in the game that Chris Godwin will be playing in. It's Brady. It's Rodgers, the conference championship game in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. It is football pornography. What are you thinking here with Green Bay laying 3.5 and the total in the low 50s, around 51.5 or 52?
Well, first off, I was a little tilted last week with the Saints game. Whether, you know, it was Ed Teach's tweeting about it and all the futures I had on the Saints. And I just knew what was going to, I mean, you could see Breeze was done, and it just was, it was not a fun game for me. I don't often get like let games get to me, but for some reason it wasn't like it was that big of a financial loss for me. It just, that one kind of got to me. But this week, so I'm kind of rooting for Green Bay kind of because of that. And I like rooting against Tom Brady, but in terms of my handicap here, I think there's sort of two factors I think that give Green Bay an advantage. One is, I think that home field advantage, while it has been down this year, I think Green Bay has a greater home field advantage here than is typical, given the weather and the sort of cold weather acclimatization advantage that they will have over Tampa Bay. There's been studies looking all the way back at NFL data since 1981. Actually, it was a study in 2007 looking at 25 years of NFL data, and it found overall that teams basically, cold weather teams hosting teams from warm weather cities where the temperature differential was in the road team city that week was significant, was very different and much colder than or was much the temp. The temperature in the home at game time was a lot colder than the road team's city that week. So in this case, you have Tampa going from 70 degrees to like 25 degrees. That's a pretty big difference. I know. And so I think that there's physiological theories on the body adapting to cold weather, and it's sort of the flight or fight response. And it's why home field advantage, for example, is stronger in early in games across all sports. And so, but it also, like, home field advantage has been stronger when you have that sort of cold weather acclimatization advantage. And, you know, you say that Tom Brady has lots of experience playing in the cold. He played at Foxborough for however many years. But I don't really think that's particularly relevant. He's been in the sunshine and warm weather of Florida for a year. And, you know, think about, like, when it's the summer and you have like a really cold day, you're not used to it. I don't think your body maybe a little bit, but your body doesn't look back and be like, oh yeah, no, I'm totally used to the winter. Like, I'm used to 10 degree weather because I was in Chicago, for one winter or something, as may be the case. No, it's like, it's been 70 degrees. I'm not really ready for like 30 degrees. So I think the whole Tom Brady will be able to handle the cold thing. I don't personally, and maybe this is just, maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, but I don't.
No, I can tell you, can I offer you a personal anecdote? And then I'd like you to finish your thought. So I am a lifelong, or not lifelong, cause I haven't always lived in New York, but I am a native New Yorker, lived in New York almost all my life, moved to South Florida in 2015, spent 3 years there, then moved back up to the Northeast. And when I would come home to visit after, like, you know, spending like 6 months straight in Florida, would come home and then get into the cold, I'd be like, oh my God, like, this is bad. Like the couple days per year. And it's always, interestingly enough, around this time of year. And I always associated with it with championship weekend in the National Football League, where there will be a couple days in Florida where it'll be like high 40s, low 50s. And you would think these people are in the North Pole, in the Arctic, in Antarctica, because they're all wearing parkas and shit. And it's like 48 degrees, which to us here in the Northeast is like balmy this time of year. Yeah. So I think you might be onto something there.
I agree. I mean, you lose it pretty quickly, I think, at least in my experience. But so the other thing, pointing in Green Bay's favor, in my opinion, is Arians' track record in facing better teams. You know, over the last two decades, out of all coaches, you know, I looked at this sort of coach effect of sort of playing up to the competition, and vice versa, playing well against the bad teams and playing worse relative to expectation, of course, against good teams. And Arians is the most extreme coach in terms of beating up on the teams he should beat and not really playing well against the good teams, against the elite teams, which, I mean, kind of says that, you know, I think it's typically a philosophy that says, like, this is what we do, we're going to do it well, and if we execute, we'll beat you. But it's not especially creative. It's not throwing new wrinkles out there. And, you know, with Brady in the mix now, maybe that changes a little bit, but, you know, I haven't seen it so far. And so, I mean, that points that direction as well. My raw numbers, you know, with a sort of more typical home field advantage, I make it 3.5, which is basically where the market is right now. But if you throw out priors, and so in Tampa is benefiting from priors here a little bit, given Green Bay's, well, Rodgers down year the last few years, at least down from his standards. If you throw out priors, it's Green Bay -5. But I do think these other factors, which are not in those numbers, kind of will make it a little bit stronger. So, I think the line is pretty tight here, but I lean Green Bay.
So let me kind of pitch you. I was going to say like my theory, but Nick's been using it all week, so I'll call it our theory on the show for how we kind of think the game is going to play out.
I mean, most of the nation, Ken, would actually say it's my theory.
Let me pitch you Nick's theory. Here's Nick's theory. Nick ran the code on this, and what he came up with was basically that not so much, you know, what the raw number on what he makes the full game. I'm just going to pretend Nick is doing all of this work, but when the points are going to be scored, or like the distribution of points in this game, it seems like, and you know, I think the question here is this predictive or not? Green Bay has played a style where basically like they are the best first half team in the NFL and like of all time, almost like they're just, their second quarter scoring is historic. They get out to huge leads in every game that they play, and Tampa does the exact opposite, which for a good team is very bizarre, that they find themselves down by large margins in a lot of the games that they play against elite competition. Like, do you think things like that are predictive? And if so, I mean, for Nick and I, that would lend itself to like Green Bay first quarter, first half, and then like see what happens after that.
So I think they can be. I think in general, they're for everyone that is predictive, you'll find 10 that you think are significant that aren't. I think maybe, I guess you have to ask yourself what would be causing it. Is Green Bay fundamentally playing different in the first half than they would in the second half? You know, have they just, are they coming out more, are they coming out aggressive? A lot of times coaches, at least they used to script like the first number of, X number of offensive plays. But you were saying for Green Bay, it's in the second quarter. I mean, part of that, obviously, I think is going to be Rodgers in the 2-minute drill. He's going to be better there than most quarterbacks. But with Tampa, on the other hand, I think maybe it's more likely there's something there if they're trying to establish the run on a consistent basis, which is generally not a plus EV move on their part. But if they do that, you fall behind, then you have to throw. And so it's, to me, it almost says it's bad coaching if you're coming out flat and you're sort of operating suboptimally.
All right. So that's the Packers Chiefs game. Let's turn our attention to the second game, which is the Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. We both like Buffalo. How about you?
Yeah.
What do you like with the Bills and the Chiefs?
Okay. So I'll tell you this. I bet Buffalo plus three. I don't know if I like it anymore, but that I bet it basically thinking that the public was underestimating the chance that Mahomes doesn't play, or that if he does play, he's not full strength. I mean, you saw his toe, he was limping around, beforehand. And now everybody forgets about the toe because he got concussed or whatever it is, the neck. I don't even know. Was it actually a concussion?
This is what I've been saying. Yeah. If he wasn't concussed, then I've never seen anyone concussed ever. And Jim Nance even said it. Nance had the line of the week and goes, that's basically, I'm paraphrasing, as big a concussion as I've ever seen, pregnant pause, but I'm not a doctor. It was what I legitimately laughed out loud. It was great. Yes, he was concussed regardless.
But when you look at the replays, you don't really see him hitting his head doesn't hit the ground really. I guess it's helmet to the back of the head a little bit, but that wasn't a hard shot. And so... And then you hear something about it being a neck thing.
Like a nerve injury, they said. Yeah, I have a pinched nerve. You know what?
Been woozy from a pinched nerve.
But woozy to the point that you can't stand up. Like, he was on another planet. That motherfucker was concussed. Yeah. I don't care what they say.
Well, I heard someone reference, like, it's like some sort of UFC reverse naked stranglehold thing where, you get knocked out for a sec, you lose consciousness, and you're back, but, it's you can get knocked out from not a concussion, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
But he's out there. The point is, he's not 100%. Right. The point is, he's not 100%. Like, your handicap is that. Right. Your handicap is whether it's neck or concussion. I mean, your point's valid literally no matter what the injury is, which is that he's less than 100%. And so, therefore, you think the Bills might have been valuable in that situation.
So, my handicap basically was yes. Like, I make the game 2.2, Kansas City minus 2.2 under normal circumstances. And I saw minus three. I see that there's a chance Mahomes doesn't play, especially if it's a concussion. The team doesn't make the decision. I know people have the conspiracy theories that, like, there's no way this guy's not going to be independent. Like, Goodell will exert some influence or something. The NFL does not want to see Mahomes miss this game. And I understand that. But I was like, well, what's the probability that Mahomes doesn't play? Is it 10%? Is it 5%? Is it 2%? Is it 25%? You know, because if Mahomes doesn't play, that line is like Buffalo minus 4.5, minus 5, something like that. And I thought if he does play, I think the line goes up to 3.5 or a juice 3. So basically, I'm losing. And we saw a very limited reaction, a very muted reaction to the announcement that he has cleared the concussion protocol today. It moved, I think Penny moved from maybe minus 3, minus 112 to minus 3, minus 116 or something. But I think part of that is because we knew, the news coming out of Kansas City this week was positive, was optimistic. So, but the line moved from basically minus 3 to like minus 3, minus 125 or something. So it's not a huge move, but I think you would have seen a ginormous move the other way. And I guess I just thought that people were underestimating sort of the tail risk, the risk that Mahomes doesn't play or is severely limited. And I don't know, we won't know really, I guess, until we see him play, how limited he is, if he is. But I kind of figured even if he does play, it's not the worst bet. I lean that way anyway. And I figured, yeah. And so I thought it was worth the play at that point. But in terms of what I actually think about the game, I mean, one interesting thing, Arians, you know, how Arians is bad against the good teams. Andy Reid's the opposite. And that kind of throws a wrench here. He is the number two coach, Belichick's number one, in terms of guys that play better or whose teams overperform the better the team they play is. And so it makes sense when you look at Kansas City. I mean, they haven't covered in what, 8 straight games, 9 straight games, something like that. But it's not like they play poorly. It's that they've done what it takes. They've thrown out, Andy Reid's had the vanilla playbook. You know, he's not showing the preseason playbook. He's not showing the good plays against the bad teams. And it seems like when they play, when the games matter, you know, he can pull out, you know, the good plays, the creative plays, and they end up, and that's why they do so well. So that kind of goes against my Buffalo side. But the other thing is, I mean, Buffalo has been exceptionally good this year. And if you look overall, they have been better in terms of the predictive metrics than Kansas City this year. Like if I was making a power rating and all I knew was what I saw on the field this season, I would have Buffalo as a better team by 0.8 points, which is a big reason that my line is only Kansas City minus 2.2.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So I think, I mean, there was a ton to unpack there that I think was really good, whether it's the coaching or some of the other angles that you were looking at. One thing, and this can apply to the first game that we talked about as well, but it's worth, you hammered this last week. So, I mean, I assume your opinion hasn't changed, but just the same thing again, earlier meetings between teams that have played already this season and then play again in the playoffs, how much do they matter? You know, we've talked a lot about on this show and other forms of gambling content will no doubt explore the previous regular season meeting between, you know, both matchups that we have Championship Sunday. You know, are those worth extra weight to you? How much do you kind of, you know, figure in what happened in those games to your handicap of the games taking place on Sunday?
No, they're not worth much to me. I mean, when two teams play for the second time in the regular season, how often do you think about that?
I would say rarely. Well, I mean, if it was like two times in 3 weeks, maybe I would care a little bit more. But
I think because it's such a big game, everything's magnified and people are looking at to explore every little thing they can. And I do think in this case, you had Tampa's worst game of the year against. Well, they had two really bad games, I guess. Or no, sorry, Green Bay's worst game of the year, not Tampa's. Tampa had the really bad game against New Orleans, and you know, I wish that previous meetings had mattered a little more last week, but Green Bay played their worst game of the year against Tampa. That was in Tampa, but it was what, week six, I think, which I think was the same week Kansas City and Buffalo.
They both played in week six. Yep.
Kansas City and Buffalo was that weird game where you could barely see the field watching it on TV with all the fog. Is that right?
There was summer. So I rewatched the game last night, actually, as part of like an examination of does that game matter? And there was rain and it was there. The visibility wasn't, it was also like 55 degrees. That's part of the reason why you remember fog being a part of it. Like there was not a ton of wind. So I've had an interesting back and forth with people today about like, was weather a huge part of that game? Like it was a huge part of the viewing experience. Like you couldn't see the field very well, but I'm not even sure like, because people want to toss that game because of weather. Like, I don't even think weather was like a huge deal in that game. Now that may not matter to you because you don't think the game matters as much anyway.
No, I mean, I think it's just one game.
Right.
And I think especially when you're dealing with good coaches, they are going to have different game plans. It's not a situation where this is what this is, this team's identity. I think if it's a, you know, if we were talking about like a military academy playing the running the triple option, you could say this team plays the triple op, played, you know, really, really well and stopped the triple option. Like, yes, that then, you know, I could see it mattering there. But I think you're going to see some creative game planning, at least out of the coaches not named Bruce Arians probably. And I think that the best coaches, I mean, if we try to figure out, like, as analysts and prognosticators, we try to figure out what these coaches are going to do. The opposing coaches are doing the same thing too. And so the best coaches are the ones where, you know, you can't figure it out. And so I think you have three really, really good coaches left in the playoffs right now. So I think there's going to be some tricks up their sleeves.
Rufus, final question, and it is non-related to the games this weekend. And if you can't come up with a good answer off the top of your head, it's totally okay. We'd love to ask you at another time, but it's a topic that we kind of broached last week on the show, where I think the way sports bettors think about life in general and the way, like, successful pro sports bettors kind of apply concepts that you use to win money, kind of betting on sports or just gambling in general. In this instance, it would be betting on sports, apply it to life, to like make better life decisions. So my question to you is this, and it's a little open-ended, and if you don't feel comfortable giving a great answer, maybe we can do it another time. But my question is, what is one instance, right, or something that you use to bet on sports and to be a good sports bettor that you're able to take into your life and apply it to almost like, maybe not to be a better person, but to make better decisions or to live a better life, if that makes sense?
I think there's so many things. I think being a sports bettor has tremendously influenced the person I am in a good way. And I think I understand randomness better than almost anybody out there, just because I deal with it all the time. But I think maybe the most specific thing I'll say is being able to understand, being able to not stress about things you can't control. So, I mean, you place a bet. I guess nowadays you can live bet almost anything, but you place a bet and, you know, you have I have a process. I put my action in and then it's not in my hands. It's in the hands of those players on the field. And I have to separate myself from that. And so I think in general in life, you have to think about the things that you can't control. And I think stressing over those things you can't control is sort of a recipe for being less happy and being more stressed.
I think it's a great answer. Would love to delve into this topic a little bit more with you at some point.
I love this stuff.
No, yeah, I have to tell you, I really do too. And it really hit me. And I think I said this to you because you came on the show after like COVID really hit. The people that I really wanted to talk to about it were sports gamblers. Not because they're like great at winning money betting on games, but because the way that you guys think, you and Ken, guys like Ron Pozzola, other guys that we have on the show, I just think it's so interesting, like applying those sorts of philosophies and the way that the games are broken down and like you were just saying, and to apply it to everyday life, I feel like it's something that could help a lot of people. And I think it's very interesting. And it's more about it this offseason. Yeah.
As weird as this sounds, like sports betting led me to Buddhist philosophy.
Do you want to take a like 30 seconds and tell us a little bit?
Elaborate
about that?
On that? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it just like the Buddhist philosophy just resonated with me because it, like, at least when I was introduced to it with my background in sports betting and randomness and all that stuff and controlling what you can control, and basically understanding uncertainty. And I mean, I could spend an hour on it. So I feel like I'm just gonna I would just blather on and on.
Can we take a rain check and maybe do it a little more in detail another time?
Yeah, football's definitely going away. We're gonna have some time. It's good. Golf and Buddhism. That'll be the topic of like 2 weeks from now.
You better you.
Listen, that'll be my book someday.
You better you Buddha here on radio.com. Rufus, before we get you out of here, I stole our producer texted that to us. I couldn't let that go. It was Tyler's joke. Before we get you out of here, Rufus, tell the people about all the great stuff you've got going on your podcast that we urge everybody to check out.
Bet the Process. Yeah. You can listen to it wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's myself and Jeff Ma, and we have seven listeners. And so you're welcome to be the eighth.
Well, I'm sure that those are seven enlightened and informed listeners. And I guess I did use the word enlightened specifically. Yes. Rufus, we appreciate you, buddy. Hit him up on Twitter at Rufus Peabody. And good luck this weekend, my friends. And we look forward to having this conversation again soon.
Hey, thanks. Good luck to you guys, too.
That's our friend Rufus Peabody joining us here on You Better You Bet. I loved that.
Yeah. A lot of, it was fun to have, in back to back to back segments, because there was a part of me at the start of the show that was like, man, that's like a lot of NFL in a row for us. Not so much, I mean, for the viewer, it's, I feel like you can't hear enough NFL because the games are so good. But for us, like, will it sound different? And so for you and I to do our thing for 45 minutes and then to have Evan, which is like such a tone change, like fantasy props on a lot of on field stuff, a lot of metrics that are player driven and player specific. And then to have Rufus, where it's, I mean, not only Buddhism and, you know, these superfluous things surrounding or the extra things surrounding the interview, but just again, a totally different perspective on like how to bet into these games and how to do it profitably. Like, I feel like that was such a complete like circle of analysis of these games where I honestly feel like I was almost surprised how different they were, like that they were that there was that much stuff to unpack in each one.
I really want to do like, I don't know, maybe we'll do like a whole episode on it one day.
Sure.
Like applying
plenty of days coming up,
applying winning sports betting principles and philosophies to like to sure. live a better life.
Yep.
There is part of me. So I've been doing a lot of reading on stuff, and like, there is some stuff that I feel like I've just kind of always like naturally gotten. So some of the stuff I'm like, okay, like I've kind of, without even knowing it, I've kind of practiced this and I've kind of like, I've known it. There's other stuff that I read and I'm like, well, fuck, this is really obvious. And there's part of me that's like, okay, this is great. I'm 37. God willing, I have more than half my life in front of me right now where I can use these principles for the rest of my life and be better, right? Because that's always the goal. We always want to be better, you know, the next day, right, or the next month or year, whatever. And part of me is also, though, like, shit, man, like, I don't wish I'd realized some of this stuff a little sooner. Now, none of it is like, none of it is like death blow, like,
right,
like conditions where I lose overall. Like, I'm still think that I've done pretty well.
You've done very
not,
well.
Yeah. But this is not a referendum on that. It's more just like, there's so much shit out there that's like so smart and so good that can be applied to being just better, a better decision maker in life, viewing things through a different lens that's going to make you happier and make you better. Like, when you understand randomness, and when you understand that, like, there's shit you can't control, I think stuff like that is so smart and, like, very important and, like, not talked about enough because, like, I don't know. It doesn't have to be, like, a referendum on, like, fucking, no, like, who gives a shit about fucking, like, you know, geometry. I'm sure geometry has its use, or, like, fucking, like, I don't know.
Hey, Pythagoras. Come on, man. Guy's got a theorem, you know?
But this is the type of shit, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, we were joking about it over text yesterday, but, like, the idea of, like, EV, expected value, and, like, how, like, you should be thinking about that with like almost any decision that you ever make in life should be in terms of that. Like, what's the expected value of this? Is it a plus EV or a minus EV decision? Like, that should be every decision you make should be weighted on that.
Right. And there's I'm learning how to play chess for really like the first time in my life during this period of time, during these last like 3 to 4 months, really like 2 to 3 months. And I'm still terrible, but there's and this will be for anybody that actually plays chess, it'll be like, well, duh, this happens. There's like a term in chess called a fork, basically, where you make a move where basically no matter what the opponent's move is, you will gain a piece as a result of that move. So you threaten two pieces simultaneously, when obviously your opponent has to basically pick which one to move, or threaten pieces in counter. But like, the fork is, it's almost like a plus EV move, right? Like, no matter what happens as a result of this move, I'm gaining something. Like, I'm gaining a piece, right? And so learning about that and like trying to apply that methodology has been really interesting. The other concepts, and Rufus talked about all the things that he kind of applies for, you know, the not control, you know, don't, what can you not control? What can you control? He talked about a lot of that stuff, which I think is really interesting. I think there's actually a book called The Power of Habit, but I would argue like habits and like knowing what they are and controlling them is like, obviously in this January New Year's resolution type time, that's just really important. Whether it's you're trying to lose weight or you're trying to do something, getting into good habits is really important. But like, bad and good sports betting habits, I think, are so not talked about enough, where if you do something enough and it's bad, like, you're just going to get into a rut where, you know, every time it's almost like a Pavlov dog thing. Like, you hear the Monday Night Football theme song, there's a part of you that's just going to go on your phone and bet 25 props. Like, it's almost, you're just trained, like, I have to have action on this. I have to, because it's habit forming. You get to every primetime NFL game, well, I always have bets on the game, so I need to have action on this game. Or, you know, when you want a live bet, or that you associate betting with drinking, or betting with certain friends that you hang out with, or betting with going to a certain place, whatever it is, like, the power of those habits, to kind of paraphrase the title of that book, and being able to change your habits and get better ones instead, right? Where it's, at least understanding I'm going to want to make a bet in this spot. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe in certain spots I should. I have a couple situations, and I won't go into detail on what they are, but like setups in basketball games where I should actually probably be betting more on half times of very specific types of NBA and college games. And I never trust myself enough that my read on the situation is correct. And I would be up much more money if I had taken my own, like basically just trusted myself that my handicapping of the situation was correct. Kind of these very contrarian halftime spots that exist. And that's like a habit that I actually need to build. Like I need to have more confidence and like I have the support and all that kind of stuff to be able to bet them. So just again, good and bad habits, you know, true in everything, but true in sports betting too.
It's fascinating because like it delves into like a deeper philosophical conversation because like I get the idea of like what you can control, but at one point, like, do you want to try and exert control over a situation, like a situation where like, and I'm not referring to like you bet on a game, but like even in life when something happens and like you see something about to happen, is it easier just to be like the Buddhist philosophy of whatever is and you deal with whatever happens, or is it better to try and, you know, exert right. whatever will you have?
You're on the scale.
Yeah, to try and change. So I find this stuff to be, we're going to do like a full show on this at some point. Cause I think it actually does tie into sports gambling, and just like people out there. And I don't know if people are thinking this or not, but like plus EV stuff to everyday life. I think I said this on the show. I had an old BlackBerry and I knew that hadn't been turned on for years. And I knew that there was like funny stuff on there, like from like conversations I had with friends, and right. I wanted to turn the BlackBerry back on. So I ordered this charger, right? Like a BlackBerry charger off Amazon, until I realized that a charger that I had, I was like, I had this eureka moment where I looked at the charger, which was for my vape pen. And I looked at it and I was like, I think this would work with the BlackBerry. And it ended up working. Now in a situation that slightly mirrors, except in no way, real shape or form, the Bitcoin guy situation who couldn't remember his password, the guy that can't get into his
account. Oh my God. Tragic story.
So I couldn't remember the password, and I was just like, you know what, fuck it. It doesn't even really, I threw the BlackBerry out because it's like, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So the charger gets here. It's like $10, $11, whatever. Right. And my girlfriend's like, you know, what are you gonna do with this? And I was like, I'm gonna throw it out. And she was like, well, why wouldn't you just go return it? And I was like, well, the effort that has to go into that, like I have to like block off time in my day, drive to like some fucking bullshit that I don't want to deal with, whoever the fucking people are, stand on a line, everyone's wearing masks, stand on a line to fucking go get $10 back to send this back to Amazon and then drive home. Like that expenditure of time, which is going to A, take up my time, B, piss me off because I'm gonna have to wait on some line and deal with some fucking moron. Not worth it for me, minus EV to do that, because the $10 is not worth the time and the aggravation to me. The plus EV move for me is to just say, fuck it, punt, throw it out, done. On to the next thing. $10, all good, whatever, done.
Yeah, the value of time. And that's what you're calculating, basically. It's the value of your time. Your time happens to be very valuable, as it turns out. Yeah.
Well, it's not worth it to me to spend the time, like, for $10? Like, if it were, like, for, like, $100, I'd consider it. I may not even do it for $100.
Sure. Yeah, but, again, everyone's situation is different, and for you, that makes perfect sense.
I'll say this, and like that is, and I understand how that may come off. That's not me trying to be like I've got so much money that I can waste this money. I've always been like this, even when like I made no money. Like this sort of it makes my skin crawl thinking about like going through the process of like returning something. Like, sure. I would just rather just eat it.
Right. There's just an emotional, forget the time spent. There's an emotional tab here that you're not interested in paying.
I'm not interested because like, it's the act of having to do it. Yeah. Like I'm angry before I go, cause I know I'm going to have to stand on a line and deal with some bullshit. And it's not worth it. I'd rather
you don't
just
like people. It. We both hate people. So, you know, I don't want to deal with people. Yeah. So
try to like
hate
people.
I hate people.
You know, I was going to save this for the power hour. Maybe I'll save, you know, I'll save.
No, we're in it. We're in it already.
So the other night I'm watching TV and it was like, I think this is Wednesday night.
Yep.
It was like 11:45 and I was like reading and I was watching something. Oh, I was finishing Lupin on Netflix and it ended like 11:45.
All right.
So it's like, I'm going to put something on here and I'm going to finish reading. I turned on, you know, Seinfeld's on. So I turned on channel 11.
Which one was it? Because I think I get the same channel you do.
The Jerk Store.
Oh yeah, I did see it on. I did see it on that night. I was sweating the Suns Rockets total at the same time. Yeah.
And I didn't realize I had forgotten that Milos, the tennis instructor, is the same episode as the
Jersey. Oh yes.
And Milos, it's the whole scene of him playing tennis. Oh, the big baby can't even return the ball. Oh, the baby got lucky.
Where is your something? It's like, oh, baby, where is your diaper?
it's amazing. It is so funny.
And then Jerry eventually hits the ball at him. It's like, yeah. Oh, I'll give you a diaper. It's like, oh, what are you doing?
The baby got lucky on that one. Yeah. It's very funny that, like, there's that, and then also very funny, like stereotypical foreigner impersonation on Seinfeld, right, is the super in the episode where Jerry wears the fur coat, and the super goes, "Love me, praise me, shower me with kisses." And Kramer goes to look at Jerry. He's a real fancy boy, isn't he, with his coat?
There was the one where the Cadillac gets wrecked was on last night. That was last night's episode where he gives it to whatever his parents' neighbor is. I forget the guy's name. The like slick guy, basically. And he ends up driving the car into the swamp. But George's parents, they ask him what they should do.
Oh, in Florida? Like, in Florida? Yeah. Where is this?
In Boca del whatever.
Jack Columbus.
Yeah. Boca del Vista or whatever.
Boca del Vista, yeah.
Yeah. And the entire episode is also George's parents.
Del Boca Vista.
I'm sorry. Yeah. George's parents asking George, like, should we move down to Florida and spend our money or should we not? And but they're down in Florida and they're kind of having this argument, but just like, yeah, I mean, Jerry Stiller, like, God rest his soul. Like, they eventually, when he gets like so fired up and it's like, that's it, we're going back to New York. And then there's a small pause and he just goes, where's my hat?
My dad's favorite Seinfeld line, and like Estelle, George's mom.
Yep.
Lived in Port Washington on Long Island where my dad used to work, and he used to like see her like around, and like my dad's favorite Seinfeld line was, I don't even know what episode it's in, but George is there in the middle of them fighting, and she, like, Estelle says something about a divorce, and Jerry Stiller goes, "You want a divorce? You've got a divorce."
Incredible. I forget who it was when he passed away, that just that he's like in so few of the episodes for so little time, but he's so memorable versus how much he's in the episodes.
She's great, incredible.
Yeah, but just like, that's it, we're going back to Florida, where's my hat?
Incredible. Is that the episode where like the Seinfelds like put off hanging out with them and they get pissed, right? That's that episode, right? Where they lie.
Yeah,
about
that's episode. And then I think it's as part of, but yeah, but like it's all woven into the same thing where they move and then they move back. And it's like the map of like New York and Del Boca Vista where they're like the arrows going back and forth. Yeah.
Incredible. All right. We'll take a break here on You Better, You Bet. And when we come back, it's the power. It's on your head. It's the power hour here. And that's a Fawlty Towers reference also. You still need to watch that show. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll hit every NBA game on the board tonight. There are a lot of them. Any college basketball bets Ken has got. Any college basketball bets Tyler's got for tonight. We'll get Bill's NHL picks for tonight as well. And then we'll talk a little UFC at the top of next hour. And then it's overnights. And then we say skedaddle out of here on a Friday. So Power Hour coming up right after this. Probably a short. 624?
How about like 26?
All right. We'll see you at 626 for a 34-minute Power Hour on You Better, You Bet.